Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ACTUS podcast, a biweekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and ACTUS. I'm Jess Flegel, the editor for ACTUS, and I'll be your host for today's show. We have a great one lined up. I'm going to be joined by several members of the ACTUS team shortly, including ACTUS Director Rebecca Hendren, Associate Editorial Director Linnea Archibald, and Editorial Manager Carla Kozak. Today's show will also feature an interview about AI-driven clinical validation denials with our guest, Karen Lane, MSN Ed, CCDS, CCDSO, CDIPRN, Clinical Documentation Integrity Specialist 3 at an academic medical center in the Midwest. She contributed to an article published in ACTUS's May-June edition of the CDI Journal, titled "The Baseline Trap, Defeating AI-Driven Clinical Validation Denials," and we'll be discussing the article and its findings. Besides clinical validation denials, you'll find articles in this edition written about the connection between payer denials and CDI queries, the role of a CDI denial specialist, compliantly navigating DRG denials, and much, much more. I know denials is a hot topic in the CDI profession, so I hope after you get this sneak peek, you'll dive into the in-depth education that's been written in the CDI Journal on this topic. Also, a quick reminder that the ACTUS podcast offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used toward your CCDSO or CDS recertification requirements. We'll share the instructions at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. Thanks again so much for joining us, Karen. I'm super glad we could have you here with me today. So I wanted to ask you first, how involved are you and your team in the denial process at your organization?
Yeah, it's great to be back on the show again. And it's a really good question because every organization is involved in their denials team process differently. And I would say that our coding and CDI team work really closely on DRG downgrade denials. And within our team, we work very well, but we have not expanded to a larger team format to include all denial writing capabilities across our hospital. But following the documentation process from admission to post-discharge, ensuring that all those elements of the story are supported, and then that takes that bridge from the front end to the back end, and hopefully our denial process, we're reducing denials because we're fixing the front to support the back end of the denial.
Right. Yeah. Do you have plans to continue that, like to expand more?
Yeah, so absolutely. We're always looking at process improvement, and it's a big problem all across the health system, inpatient, outpatient. Everyone is seeing, you know, double digit increases year over year. And so we do look for that, but we also have to say, what is the benefit of us stepping out of the DRG denial role and helping outpatient? Of course, there's a big system, you know, but it takes away from what we're doing, and we're already blowing bubbles trying just to keep ourselves over water.
Right, right. No, yeah, that makes sense. Thank you for that. I wanted to ask about in the article that you wrote, which was great, by the way. You said this quote, in the world of clinical validation, adjectives are the enemy. I loved how you phrased that. Can you expound more on how you figured out what wording, like pair algorithms, are flagging like your organization?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's really a question all across CDI and coding. You know, we're trying to figure out what are these proprietary algorithms that exist. And because the payers have shifted from clinical driven review to automated AI logic, that means we had to change everything. So AI doesn't interpret the way the clinician would. It's pattern matching, it's rules. It looks for keyword signals. And when it finds them, it fires its own denial logic. We started tracking our denial patterns and noticed that certain languages were consistently appearing in cases that got flagged. Vague, subjective descriptors, words like appears to be, seems consistent with, appears altered. and gave that algorithm nothing concrete to evaluate. And because AI systems struggle with causal flow, longitudinal reasoning, subjective phrasing, that triggers those ambiguity flags within the AI algorithms. So what works instead is narrative structure that describes how a patient presented. So if a nurse's note says, 1:20 a.m., patient climbing out of bed, picking at the air and screaming, that's pretty, you know, detail oriented versus patient's mental status is waxing and waning. That's very ambiguous.
For sure. And that actually ties into my other question. Like, you wrote about like leaning into numerical objective data, mm-hmm. because that creates a hard stop for the pairs algorithm. And you talked about like the Glasgow coma scale for encephalopathy. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if there are other commonly denied diagnoses that often get documented like this with like subjective statements that people aren't realizing are flagging this algorithm. So do you know of any other diagnoses and also any underutilized tools for these that might assist people in creating what you described as a hard data trail? I also really liked how you phrase that as well.
Yeah, thanks. So there are some great tools out there. Encephalopathy is one of our top denied diagnoses precisely because it's often documented in subjective language without linking those observations to measurable indicators. And that Glasgow coma scale creates that hard objective data trail. So other common denied diagnoses that suffer from this subjective documentation, malnutrition. Often providers will say poor intake rather than tying it to a validated assessment tool like the malnutrition screening tool or the MST, or a registered dietitian's formal assessment using the Aspen criteria. When you're able to tie those two things together, it creates that trail. Another diagnosis, sepsis, that's number one for us for denials. And so you get vague terms rather than anchored clinical pictures. And it creates that subjective word, hemodynamically unstable. We have to document, you know, the patient is hypotensive and the blood pressure was 70 over 50 when we started two pressors. So that's a one for sepsis. Acute respiratory failure. We often document respiratory failure without those arterial blood gases. What is the O2 requirement trending? The copy and paste feature in some of these EMRs, you'll see the patient's been on 2 liters nasal cannula in the progress note for days, but in the flow sheet, the patient was weaned off oxygen days ago. So it's important that we teach providers copy and paste is a great function, but we have to make sure that the data that we're providing in there is accurate. The acute kidney injury, always getting a clear baseline creatinine comparison or explicit linking to the underlying etiology. So is this contrast related? Was this drug induced? So getting that linking documentation, although sometimes that doesn't give us financial reimbursement to send that query, it still is important to have that linking etiology. And for underutilized tools, I really think the serial neurological exams and the flow sheets with the Glasgow coma scales, the Aspen or GLIM criteria that your dietitians are pulling in, your respiratory flow sheets to show your oxygen trends, and your ventilator adjustments, those are very important in respiratory failure. And then trending the documentation in your nurse's notes to support mental status getting better, Glasgow coma scale going up. So the key principle here in this is that the medical record is your evidence, and the appeal letter synthesizes that evidence into a narrative. but that hard data must be present in the chart.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love all those examples you gave. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Another problem that you mentioned that an algorithm will pick up on is contradictions in the documentation. So what tactics have your CDI program implemented to address this kind of issue?
Yeah, so these contradictions are one of the most powerful weapons that payer algorithms use against us. A note says the patient is not in distress, followed by IV antibiotics, supplemental oxygen, and monitoring. That's conflicting, and that's the signals that they have built into these AI algorithms specifically to look for this. A few things that we do, second level review before final coding for any of your appeals that are your number one or number two. If sepsis is your number one and acute respiratory failure is your number two in your health system, those may be the ones you want to send for second level review besides your HACCPs and PSIs. Cross-team collaboration. CDI sits at the center of our collaborative ecosystem, but we also bring in coding, case management, our physician advisor, revenue integrity. And as we talk this narrative of the chart through, are we able to eliminate any of those internal contradictions and silos that may get the chart denied?
Right. Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So besides, we've talked about adjectives and contradictions. I wanted to make sure, were there any other points of weakness that you've noticed that payer algorithms tend to flag?
Yeah. So this is a great question because although the insurance company has their proprietary algorithms, there are some trending wording that we are seeing when we compare denial letters. And so saying things like the diagnosis clearly meets, don't be defensive in your letter, the patient unequivocally satisfied sepsis 3 criteria, that can actually backfire on you to have negative comment in your letter. You want to keep your letters neutral in your clinical review. Overusing of numerical thresholds. So if you are constantly, you know, you want to drive that point home, but you want to say it in a manner that is worded correctly. So not just say the PF ratio was less than 300. You want to verbally state it in a sentence. The blood pressure required close monitoring due to hypotension trends rather than citing the specific mean arterial pressure number. You want to be descriptive rather than numeric. One other thing I have noticed recently, bullet lists and structured headings. AI, that's like a checklist for them. And they will say, well, we said this and you didn't have that in your bullet point. You're out, denied. So these are triggers for them. You know, no evidence of not clinically significant, stable at discharge. The last thing I want to mention is sending the entire medical record. I know that sometimes, you know, your PFS departments, they get a medical records request and they just send the entire encounter. And that can lead to more contraindication because the more data you send them, the more vulnerability there can be in the chart. So our team really has pared down what we send back with the denial to maybe just the H&P, maybe just the relevant flow sheet, maybe just the serial neuro exams, but just what we are defending. We're not clicking every single document and sending it with our denial.
That makes sense. Yeah, that. Thank you for all that advice. That's super helpful. So you mentioned also just earlier that you were trying to leverage the entire interdisciplinary team to help accurately tell a patient's true clinical story. So I wonder, did you have any advice for CDI programs that have yet to expand their education and their collaboration with the entire care team?
Yeah, so this is a great question and something I think, you know, as CDI, we focus on educating our providers because that's where the documentation comes from. But with this increase in denial numbers year over year, we have to branch out and start talking to the other departments. That cross-team collaboration is foundational to our defensibility and appeal strategy. So that's a little bit of a mindset shift for some CDI programs. So I think that starting with a denial dashboard, going out to your educators to share that denial data, hey, we're seeing a uptrend in malnutrition. What has changed in the documentation in malnutrition? Then maybe we have a meeting with the dietitians and we say, hey, did you guys have a format change recently? Or are we using some new criteria? Going out to your nursing department meetings and saying, hey, you know, back when you went to nursing school, it's not about, you know, CYA anymore. It's really about helping the hospital be more defensible when we get these denials back. And here's some examples that you can use in your documentation to help support us. I think that is kind of creating a culture of curiosity. When we encourage clinical investigation and advocacy, it shifts the mindset from, oh, I have to check this box from the insurance company, to clinical narrative defense, which then helps us write these denials on the back end. And I think the last thing is, when we have these meetings, we need to take that back to them and say, hey, you guys changed this formatting in your note, and now we're seeing an uptick in our overturns. And so, you know, we just want to celebrate that with you because we're building the ownership across the discipline. It's not just us over here, oh, we wrote a really good letter. We wrote a really good letter because we talked to the dietitians and got their documentation where we needed it to be to help us win.
That's awesome. I love how you put that culture of curiosity. That's a good way of putting it. So in your experience, like, what are the do's and don'ts for appeal writers to create an algorithm-proof defense? You kind of talked a little bit earlier about what to avoid, so I guess maybe we can pivot to what do you think people should include?
Yes. So I think some really important things is writing for two audiences. So the algorithm screens the appeal, and we hope that because of our narrative, it gets kicked out of AI. We confuse the robot so much that we get it kicked out. But then you're also then now writing for a human auditor, which is what we ultimately hope for. So we want to use that neutral framing. We want to get it kicked out of AI so that we get a human auditor, but then we don't want to make the human auditor mad or feel less, right? So, you know, replacing appeal with correspondence or denial with the word determination, this really helps signal informational clarification rather than I got the boxing gloves out and I'm going to left hook you, you know? So stating your clinical view in the first two or three lines and then build your narrative from a trajectory of treatment and response. So, you know, the patient came in, they were super sick, you know, over the days, this is what happened. We got them back to their baseline and they were sent home. Emphasize that trajectory, you know, the patient does not have supplemental oxygen at home. They would not have been able to care for themselves. The physical therapist required three people to get them out of bed. There's no way the wife could have taken care of this patient. Also, using your contractual language, there's been a lot of discussion at ACTIS conference and in other podcasts and articles about knowing what your contracts say. And so that's having a seat at that table and saying, show me what UnitedHealthcare says about acute respiratory failure. I need to know so we can be defensible. I think some other don'ts, don't use that language about meets criteria or satisfies. That's adversarial, and that will, AI reads the chart, but it can also read tone. So if your tone is, you know, boxing gloves up, it's probably going to deny you based on your tone also. Let's see, what else? Don't retrofit your criteria. So copying and pasting definitions without having context. Although there are screen readers built into AI, you want to argue the medicine, that what the doctor did and their context of what they did is how they helped the patient get better.
Right. Thank you. That's, I feel like you've given us such a comprehensive advice there. So I really appreciate all of those points. But yeah, thank you so much for your time. This has been so helpful. Unfortunately, we are out of time for our discussion today. I know. Yes. But luckily, there is more to read on this topic from Karen and from plenty of others that wrote for our CDI journal that was all about denials in this past month. So we hope you all will check that out. It is a benefit of ACTUS membership. But as always, if our audience has any questions, you can feel free to email the ACTUS team at info@actus.org. Now it's time for the ACTUS Update, a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. As I mentioned during the intro to today's episode, I'm happy to be joined by my colleagues Rebecca, Carla, and Linnea to share a team update from ACTUS. And I'll start us off by sharing some exciting news I have for CDI Week, the 2026 theme. Woo! This year, the theme is called Knights of the CDI Roundtable. This year will be about celebrating the magic and everything CDI professionals do, from braving new adventures to fighting foes of mythical proportions to saving damsels, at least of the documentation variety, much like heroic knights of legend. The Furthering Education Committee and I will be hard at work creating fun activities and educational resources for you and your team to use during CDI Week. But in the meantime, we need your help. A big part of the education that we offer for CDI Week comes from the industry data we collect from the community at large. And this year we want to gather information about provider education and engagement, denials mitigation and CDI involvement, outpatient CDI and risk adjustment, query practices and compliance, and pediatric and neonatal CDI. And every CDI professional's input will help us to capture the state of the industry with the utmost accuracy. And we know how much you all care about accuracy. The CDI Week industry survey is open from now until July 6th, so I hope you'll be among those who contributes. CDI Week itself...
A huge, huge congratulations to the committee, the Furthering Education Committee, and you for what an incredible theme this year. I mean... it's so exciting. I cannot wait to see what people come up with. I know that our incredible creative CDI minds out there who always wow us this year, I know, are going to go even more. I mean, Knights of the CDI Roundtable, that is so fun. I can't wait to see the contributions.
I can't wait to the pictures.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, we're real excited about it. You have some time to prepare, so start preparing now. CDI Week itself isn't until September 14th through 18th, so you'll hear a lot more from me until then about all this. But in the meantime, I know you have another important week to talk about, Linnea.
I sure do. So even though we are busily planning for CDI Week in a few months, our sister association, which is the National Association of Healthcare Revenue Integrity, or NARI, is busy hosting their own week of celebration this very week, June 1st through 5th. So I would like to take a minute and wish our whole audience a very happy Revenue Integrity Week. I know a lot of you listening report up through your Revenue Integrity Department. So I hope that you are celebrating with your colleagues. And even if you don't report up through that department, I hope that you will reach out and wish those folks a very happy celebration this week. This year's
Revenue Integrity Week.
Woohoo!
We all wish you happy Revenue Integrity Week.
We do. It's a fun time.
It is.
This year's theme, much like us at Actus, they like to have a theme for Revenue Integrity Week. The theme is setting the stage for success. And the NARI team has put together a ton of great resources for you to use in your celebrations this week, including a lovely poster, the official Revenue Integrity Industry Survey Report, and more. There's stuff coming out every day. You definitely don't want to miss it. And additionally, today, June 3rd at 1 p.m., NARI Director Nicole Voda will be leading a panel discussion webinar focused on the findings from that industry survey, and you don't want to miss that. It is completely free to attend, and you will earn one NARI CEU for doing so. And just a little tip there, you can use that NARI CEU towards your CCDS or CCDSO as well. So definitely take advantage of that if you haven't registered already, and that will be at 1 p.m. Eastern. Just like CDI Week, the NARI team will also have a whole bunch of discounts this week, as well as a lot of new resources coming out every day. So definitely take a look at their website, and we'll put that link in the show notes today so that you can stay up to date on all of the latest this week. And we really can't wait to hear how you celebrate Revenue Integrity Week, and we hope that you have a wonderful celebration. And shifting gears a little bit, Carla, I know that your sights are set even further ahead. You're looking into 2027 with the conference planning. So what should people know about maybe applying to speak next year?
Yeah, absolutely. Now that it is June, I mean, we might as well already be in 2027. I left 2026 behind. But as you think about your plans for 2027, maybe you're not fully in there the way I am, but as you think about your plans, I want to invite you to celebrate with us at the 2027 Actus Conference, which will be hosted May 16th to 19th in where else but the place for celebrations, fabulous Las Vegas. Our call for speakers is now open, and it'll be open through August 3rd, not just for the Actus Conference, but also for our Actus Symposium, Outpatient CDI, as well as our Physician Advisor Forum. Those latter two events will take place May 15th to the 16th in Las Vegas, same location, so just immediately before the Actus Conference. So sessions are 60 minutes in length, and up to two speakers per selected session get complimentary admission to the conference. And applying is super easy. All you need for your proposal is a title, a description of your session, 3 to 5 learning outcomes that just describe what an attendee for your session can expect to walk away understanding or knowing how to do. Your biography and any co-speaker information. So if somebody is going to be joining you, we'll be asking for their information as well. And then any supplemental info you might have. This isn't a requirement, but it just helps the committee get a better idea of what you're going to discuss. So whether you've done a poster on the topic and you want to include a PDF of that, or maybe you have an outline for the session, or maybe you even have some draft slides that you put together. Anything that helps the committee get a better idea of exactly what's going to be covered in your session is so beneficial. So to apply, you're going to want to use the link in today's show notes. You will have to create an account to apply. If you've applied in the past, you'll already have an account. Or if you attended an Actus conference in 2025 or 2026, you'll use the account that you use to sign into the app or the attendee portal. Now, if you know you want to speak, but you're not really sure where to start, we've got some help for you there too. Again, you can use the link in today's show notes to see a full list of topics that we're especially interested in this year. But to give you a high-level overview, some suggested topics are burns and skin failure, oncology and neoplasms, complications, audits, failure to rescue, pediatrics, neonatology, and obstetrics, analytics and artificial intelligence, denials mitigation, and that's just to name a few. And this list is pulled together from requests of past conference attendees. So it really is what people are interested in learning about. So it's a great place to start, but it's not required that you pull an idea from this list. It's just a suggestion if you need a place to begin. But if speaking isn't your thing and you're still looking for a way that you can contribute your expertise to the industry, Rebecca's got an exciting opportunity to discuss, so I'm going to pass it over to her.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carla. I'm sure everybody is aware by now, but ACTIS and AHIMA have put out a draft guidelines for achieving compliant query practice, which is more commonly known as the query practice brief. This draft was released in April, and we currently have a public comment period open. And we are asking all CDI professionals and other relevant people to read the draft and put in your public comments. The work group that has spent months reviewing and updating and putting out this draft will be reviewing absolutely every single comment that comes in and getting back together to discuss that and then making updates before we release a final version. It will no longer be the draft at that point. It will be the newly released 2026 ACTIS and AHIMA query practice brief. But I do promise you they will pore over every single submission and discuss all the comments. When you submit, you can submit either as an individual person, or some people prefer to actually get together with their organization and perhaps discuss it as a team and then submit as an organization. So you will designate one person who can then say, I am submitting on behalf of X organization. So lots of different ways to contribute. Even if you only have a couple of small comments that you want to make, perhaps as you were reading it, there was something that you thought needed a little bit of clarification, put it in. It doesn't have to be a big, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs. It could be a couple of sentences. Every single public comment is really, really vital and will ensure that the final draft that is released, or the final version, I should say, that is released, is the most useful document that we can possibly create. If you want to learn more about what's in the draft, you can, of course, go to the ACTIS website and read it in its entirety. But then if you're an ACTIS member, I do invite you, if you didn't catch the recent quarterly member call, we did dive into the draft and what's in it and why. So that could be a really great thing to listen to and really think about what was new and why before you submit your public comments. So if you want to go back and listen to that quarterly member call, you can find it on the ACTIS website. It is under the member benefits sections. And of course, for every member call, there is one CEU available that lasts for a full 12 months. So you can still get that even if you weren't able to listen live. And that, I'll pass it back to Jess.
Yeah. Thank you, Rebecca. And yeah, like she already said, we, however you'd like to give your input, we'd love to hear it. That's all the time we have for today, but as always, you can find the links for more information about all this in today's show notes. As a reminder before we close out, each ACTIS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTIS CEU, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTIS.org by clicking on the ACTIS podcast link under the Free Resources tab, and then clicking on today's episode from the list on that page. Then scroll down to the recording today's episode and click play. At the end of the video, all the way at the end, when the timer gets to zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Simply click on that to take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting the brief evaluation. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there too. To ensure your certificate reaches you and does not get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. The cutoff for today's episode CEU is Sunday, June 7th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will not be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. With that, we have reached the end of today's ACTIS podcast episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, June 17th, with a new episode hosted by ACTIS Director Rebecca Hendren. If you would like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show anytime on the ACTIS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you'd take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by D.N. Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, please email us at info@actus.org. Until next time, take care, everybody, and have a good one.